Disc 3. The Great Gatsby, continued.
After the house, we were to see the grounds and the swimming pool and the hydroplane and the midsummer flowers. But outside Gatsby's window, it began to rain again, so we stood in a row looking at the corrugated surface of the Sound. If it wasn't for the mist, we could see your home across the bay, said Gatsby. You always have a green light that burns all night at the end of your dock. Daisy put her arm through his abruptly, but he seemed absorbed in what he had just said. Possibly it had occurred to him that the colossal significance of that light had now vanished forever. Compared to the great distance that had separated him from Daisy, it had seemed very near to her, almost touching her. It had seemed as close as a star to the moon. Now it was again a green light on a dock. His count of enchanted objects had diminished by one. I began to walk about the room, examining various indefinite objects in the half-darkness. A large photograph of an elderly man in yachting costume attracted me, hung on the wall over his desk. Who's this?
That's Mr. Dan Cody, old sport.
The name sounded faintly familiar.
He's dead now. He used to be my best friend years ago.
There was a small picture of Gatsby, also in yachting costume, on the bureau. Gatsby with his head thrown back defiantly, taken apparently when he was about 18.
I adore it, exclaimed Daisy. The pompadour. You never told me you had a pompadour. Or a yacht.
Look at this, said Gatsby quickly. Here's a lot of clippings. About you. They stood side by side examining it. I was going to ask to see the rubies when the phone rang, and Gatsby took up the receiver.
Yes?
Well, I can't talk now. I can't talk now, old sport.
I said a small town. He must know what a small town is.
Well, he's no use to us if Detroit is his idea of a small town. He rang off.
Come here quick, cried Daisy at the window. The rain was still falling, but the darkness had parted in the west, and there was a pink and golden billow of foamy clouds above the sea.
Look at that, she whispered.
And then after a moment, I'd like to just get one of those pink clouds and put you in it and push you around.
I tried to go then, but they wouldn't hear of it. Perhaps my presence made them feel more satisfactorily alone.
I know what we'll do, said Gatsby. We'll have Klipspringer play the piano.
He went out of the room calling, Ewing, and returned in a few minutes accompanied by an embarrassed, slightly worn young man with shell-rimmed glasses and scanty blonde hair. He was now decently dressed in a sport shirt open at the neck, sneakers, and duck trousers of a nebulous blue.
Did we interrupt your exercises? Inquired Daisy politely.
I was asleep, cried Mr. Klipspringer in a spasm of embarrassment. That is, I'd been asleep. And then I got up.
Klipspringer plays the piano, said Gatsby, cutting him off. Don't you, Ewing, old sport?
I don't play well. I hardly play at all. I'm all out of practice.
Well, go downstairs, interrupted Gatsby. He flipped a switch. The gray windows disappeared as the house glowed full of light.
In the music room, Gatsby turned on a solitary lamp beside the piano. He lit Daisy's cigarette from a trembling match and sat down with her on a couch far across the room where there was no light save what the gleaming floor bounced in from the hall. When Klipspringer had played the Love Nest, he turned around on the bench and searched unhappily for Gatsby in the gloom.
I'm all out of practice, you see. I told you I couldn't play. I'm all out of practice.
Don't talk so much, old sport, commanded Gatsby. Play.
In the morning, in the evening, ain't we got fun?
Outside, the wind was loud, and there was a faint flow of thunder along the Sound. All the lights were going on in West Egg now. The electric trains, men carrying, were plunging home through the rain from New York. It was the hour of a profound human change, and excitement was generating on the air. One thing sure and nothing surer, the rich get richer and the poor get children. In the meantime, in between time. As I went over to say goodbye, I saw that the expression of bewilderment had come back into Gatsby's face, as though a faint doubt had occurred to him as to the quality of his present happiness. Almost 5 years. There must have been moments, even that afternoon, when Daisy tumbled short of his dreams. Not through her own fault, but because of the colossal vitality of his illusion.
It had gone beyond her, beyond everything. He had thrown himself into it with a creative passion, adding to it all the time, decking it out with every bright feather that drifted his way. No amount of fire or freshness can challenge what a man will store up in his ghostly heart. As I watched him, he adjusted himself a little, visibly. His hand took hold of hers, and as she said something low in his ear, he turned toward her with a rush of emotion. I think that voice held him most, with its fluctuating, feverish warmth, because it couldn't be overdreamed. That voice was a deathless song. They had forgotten me, but Daisy glanced up and held out her hand. Gatsby didn't know me now at all. I looked once more at them, and they looked back at me remotely, possessed by intense life. Then I went out of the room and down the marble steps into the rain, leaving them there together.